speaking today with Kathy Daniels, who is running for City Council District B. Kathy, thank you for talking to me today. Why are you running for this office?
Well, I'm running, just like as you pulled in here, the community is just so neglected. All the communities in District B primarily are poor or working class communities, the people that don't make a lot of money. And so the community is so poor. I actually had decided that I was not going to run anymore. And on March 23rd, our council member had a meeting, a capital improvement meeting, over at Fifth Ward Multi-Service Center. And in that meeting, the room was pretty much full with constituents from the area because we had encouraged people to go over there and voice their concerns. Well, we were so disrespected. We were so very, very disrespected. And I said that, I'm telling you what I said then. I felt like we were treated like children. So that day, I decided to run, March 23rd. But I'm running because of the fact that we need people who can relate to our community. As you saw coming in, the streets and the roads and no gutters. If you don't live out here, I mean actually live out here and travel these roads on a regular basis, not just here, City Gas, Pleasantville, Cashmere Gardens, Acres Homes, these are old, old communities. So if you don't live out here, you actually don't see what the blight and the issues that we actually have.
Okay. Now, you did run 2 years ago for District B. What would you say you learned from that experience?
I learned from that experience, it's important that we try to inform people, communication, inform people when the voting is occurring and what they're voting on. A lot of times, I'm a deputy voter registrar, and when I'm talking to people, a lot of them feel like their vote doesn't count. And why should I vote? They're going to do what they want to do anyway. It's what I'm hearing continuously. So I'm trying to communicate and encourage them to get involved with the politics of the city, local government, because it's important. It's important if we want to have issues addressed in these communities. So that's what I've learned from that experience. Yes, it takes a lot of endurance and money. And then there's so many political pundits that determine who's going to be in what particular office. And those people that are knighted, so to speak, don't necessarily have the best interest of the community. So I learn a lot. I learn about the piranhas and the sharks. I'm not used to that, but I've had to grow accustomed to it. So I learned a tremendous amount. I'm 56. I tell my daughter, who has her master's, I'm never too old to learn. And having gotten involved in that particular circle, I was really, really in awe with the decisions that are made for people to be appointed in the different positions in the council districts. In any district, I mean, not just council district, school board, or whatever. Just those political groups that decide on who should serve where.
Okay. What do you see as being the top priorities in District B? You talk about the infrastructure, and that's obviously one. What are the things that you want to work on if you're elected as council member in District B?
Infrastructure, and also I'd like to have a summer intern program, meaning that and use the office itself to connect with businesses, to have apprenticeships, those businesses. It doesn't have to necessarily be in B because we don't have a lot of businesses in District B. But those businesses in and around the area, use the position to connect with those presidents and managers so that they can hire people. The biggest issues we have out here, like you said, in addition to the infrastructure, are jobs. We have crime issues. But crime issues are directly associated with the fact that the people can't find jobs. They can't find jobs because most of them, a lot of them, have felony records. And those records, of course, prohibit them from finding employment. We've got to be proactive with offering more businesses incentives to hire some of these felonies and give them a second chance. In some cases, a third chance, depending on what the felon was for.
Okay. Now, I mean, as far as infrastructure goes, I mean, the main vehicle for doing roads and drainage these days is the Rebuild Houston process. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's still kind of gearing up. That, you know, it's intended to be a long term process. But have you seen, you know, have you seen any effects of it? What's your view of it?
They actually did come out here November of last year, and they started laying pipes. It took from November of last year until February of this year to complete it. My mother lives directly across the street from me. She's 78 years old. She's lived there all her life. When the pipes had never been replaced. So, of course, we look forward to them coming in and making some improvements because, as you can see out here, we have ditches. A lot of these old communities, Acres Home, City Gas, they have ditches. So they don't have the concrete draining. But even with the people that came out here, the contractors that were obviously awarded contracts under Rebuild Houston, they still disrespected our communities. They left it a mess. And at one point, I had to call in the media to come out and show the blight that was actually out here, or the mud and the mess, how they tore up the streets out here, performing the tasks associated with Rebuild Houston, laying the pipes. And we welcome change. We welcome improvement, obviously. But just don't come out here and be disrespectful and think because this is a poor community that you can leave it on a daily basis in any kind of condition. It's not fair to the people.
You know, one of the things about the Fifth Ward in particular is that it's very close to downtown, but pretty much unlike any other place that's close to downtown, it's not currently, you know, a magnet for redevelopment and, you know, new housing. Some, not mostly along, I've seen some along Lyons Avenue, but not certainly not the way the East End is mm-hmm. right now, certainly mm-hmm. not the way Midtown was 10, 20 years ago. You know, you would think that for someplace so close in, that it would attract development, and I would think that to some extent, the folks around here would like that, but they would also want to make sure that they don't themselves get priced out. How do you balance the needs of a community like this where you need some growth, you need some development, but you don't want to imperil the people who are already here who, you know, like I said, might get priced out or have their property taxes go up too much under those conditions?
And that's an excellent question. And actually, part of that, the answer to that question is education. And I say that because it seems so insignificant, but there are people, I was working with a lady just recently in the last few years that didn't know that after a certain age she could file homestead exemption, and she was almost 70 years old. So our assumption is that because we know, and as homeowners we've bought several, I've bought three properties since I've been an adult, but we assume that people know that they can file for an exemption, and if they don't, then the taxes are so astronomical over a period of time because they can't really afford them, the seniors. And after, you know, you can only go back 2 years after you filed the exemption. So they were only able to go back 2 years. And after this person passes on, then the property is going to be lost because the taxes are so astronomical that the siblings or the heirs will not be able to afford it. So part of that answer to that question is education, information. We can't assume that people know all the particulars about home ownership. Now, taxing out, we have that issue across the street, across I-10, and it's moving in. We welcome affordable housing, but we have to be able to inform. And again, education is just paramount. We have to be able to inform people that this is the process that you take in order to retain it and be able to pass it off in generations. Where I live now, my great-grandfather owned all this and sold them off as plats, which is part of the reason why we rebuilt over here. We bought this property and built over here. He owned from my mother's property all the way to the railroad and sold it all off. And over the years, people have lost the properties. So, again, I can't stress enough communication and education. We welcome people coming in with affordable housing. We just don't, we have a problem like Chapter 42. We have a problem with those expensive houses coming in and being located right next to a $25,000 valued home, and the taxes become astronomical over a period of time. So I think we should be able to grandfather in that those houses that are located next to modern development or recent development, that they have a clause where they're safe and protected for perhaps 50 years.
Now, one of the big employers in District B is Intercontinental, Bush Intercontinental Airport. And as you know, this was last year, there was a big debate. United was preparing to rebuild Terminal B, and at the same time, Southwest wanted to come in and, get granted the ability to fly internationally out of Hobby Airport, which United objected to on grounds of it would steal business away from them and there wouldn't be enough air marshals. I'm sorry, not air marshals, TSA agents for ground security. What was your view on that situation? Did you support the expansion at Hobby, or would you have opposed it?
Well, I'm a former postal manager. So, in the grand scheme of things, not just looking at the fact about the expansion, but we would have to look at routings for the vehicles, the trucks, and then what it would do to the infrastructure with the expansion out there to Hobby. Now, with the city growing at the astronomical rate in which it's growing, I think it's important that we do utilize the service of both airports. I understand that United was the prima donna of Intercontinental, but when you look at the jobs of people that live in the community, in District B particularly, I think it was less than 6%. I think it was very, very small, a very, very small number of people that actually lived in the district that worked out there that had complaints about the effect of the airport expanding to Hobby. Now, we have to be realistic, and we have to think in the future. With that being said, that it's important that we always be open-minded that because of the congestion, we need to utilize both airports.
Okay. Let's talk about the city's finances for a minute. As you know, last time we spoke, the city was coming out of some really tough economic times, had to slash budget, had to slash services, lay some people off. Since then, the economy has improved a great deal. The city has mostly restored the services that have been cut. What's your view of the city's financial situation now and your view of, the most recent budget that it's passed?
I think it's very, very interesting that last year we were talking about closing down some of the city pools, and I was out there protesting with others against that. And then we had to have Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee come in and go and seek private donations to retain the opening of the pools. It's very, very interesting that here 12 months ago, the thought of closing pools for our children. And then 12 months later, we have all kinds of programs, which is good, at the schools and various places identified for lunch programs. Where did that money come from? Is it that it's a political year that we've not had any issues about the pools being closed this year? And because of that, my common sense tells me that everything seems to be hunky-dory right now, this political year, but next year, we're going to have some issues all over again as far as the economics of the city. They talked about Costco and refunding money to Costco to build out there off of I-10 to an area that I understand would have been growing anyway. Really developed because of its location. And so I'm not sure the incentive of the $1 million was worth it. They talk about the return that we'll get on the $1 million long term, but we still don't have any identified jobs for the area to be inclusive in the contract for Costco. In order for us to do better, and it's a simple formula to me, and perhaps it's a pipe dream, but it's a simple formula. If we improve our roads and streets, then people will build houses in our community. Nobody other than me wants to come into an area like some of these poor areas that have ditches and trash located everywhere, debris, and build a house. When we improve the roads and streets, we build a house, and of course that will minimize, you'll have people that will take have concern and care for their property value, and I think that would probably minimize the amount of trash that's dumped and the weeded lots, etc. So it's like starting at basics. Let's just go back to basics. Let's repair the streets. Let's build affordable houses. We build affordable houses, then people will move into the communities. People move into the communities, then they'll attend the schools. The more children attend the schools, then the more revenue that we'll get. The more households that they can count rooftops, then the businesses will come. It didn't seem really difficult. I know it's not a quick fix, but we have to plan in the next 5, 10, 20 years. And that's what I was talking about, too, with the hobby and the
Intercontinental
and hobby airports. We have to plan for the future. Our property value here, the real estate market is soaring. People are moving into this area because people from New York and California, they couldn't afford a house there, and they're moving here because the property value, the properties are affordable. $200,000-$300,000 house would cost $1 million in those areas. So those people are flocking here. So we have to be able to accommodate them. And in order to accommodate them, we need to have better roads.
Okay. One particular issue with the city's finances that's been a point of contention has to do with pensions, in particular the firefighters' pension fund. The city, or Mayor Parker in particular, has wanted to get a law passed in the legislature that would subject the firefighters to meet and confer, like the police and municipal pensions have. Firefighters have argued against that, and so far they've won the argument, at least in the legislature. Do you support the efforts to get a bill passed to subject the firefighters to meet and confer?
I think, as a retiree, when you work toward retirement. When you set up your initial, and when you start initially and you talk about your pension and you plan long term, you work 25, 30 years, you should be afforded that that's promised to you. Now, I do think also with those new people coming on, perhaps there can be some negotiation, whereas it's not on the same type of scale. So to answer your question as to whether or not I would support legislation for the firefighters, actually for the police department.
The police is subject to meet and confer already. The firefighters are not.
The fire department, okay.
And they say they don't want to be.
Well, I'd have to look at that and look at all the details, all the particulars of that. I'm not familiar with all the particulars of it, so I have to meet with all the people that's involved, particularly the union people of the firefighters union, so that they can explain in detail, you know, what the pros and cons would be of it.
Okay. Let's talk about food for a minute, since, I'm sure you know, the city of Houston has been getting a reputation for being a really good place to eat. Restaurants, food trucks, and as you may know, the food trucks have been trying to get the city to change its ordinances to allow them to operate downtown and in the medical center. They've been before council in recent months, but you know the issue is still pending and it's likely to come up again soon. Do you support the efforts of the food trucks to get council to pass an ordinance that would allow them to operate downtown?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I don't see... Again, we're a growing city. We have to be flexible and versatile and open to new ideas. We can't continue with the same old norm of doing business. I'm sure that the restaurant people are probably reluctant because it will impact... could impact their businesses. But I think that... We're a big city, you know, there's a lot of money in the city, per se, so I think it should be open to everybody. Yes, I would definitely support it.
Okay. In 2001, there was a charter amendment passed in Houston that forbade the city from offering domestic partner benefits to its employees. As you know, the world has changed a little over the last few years with the Supreme Court ruling on invalidating the Defense of Marriage Act. I mean, that's at the federal level, but... You know, at the state and local level, in Texas, a number of cities have passed ordinances to allow its employees to have domestic partner benefits. If that movement, if there is an effort in Houston to put a charter amendment to overturn the previous one and allow the city to offer domestic partner benefits, is that something you would support?
I don't know why the government is even getting into that. I really don't. It's unfortunate that government has gotten so involved in so many in personal situations, not just with that particular issue, but so many issues. We should draw the line. We've got enough things to concern ourselves with other than partner benefits. Yes, I would support it. I would support, I'm against anything that has restrictions against a person's civil rights or rights, period. So yeah, I would support it.
Okay. I'm asking everybody this question. Who are you supporting for mayor this year?
Haven't decided. Mayor Parker, I like her as a person, individual. She's got a couple of things done for me that I've asked for, but that's just me personally. However, I am open to new ideas and new visions. So right now, I am leaning toward Ben Hall. I am definitely leaning toward Ben Hall. And it's not because of any particular dislike for the mayor. I just like, because I really do like her. I like the vision that Ben is presenting to us, the community.
Okay. And when people go to vote this November, why should they vote to vote out the incumbent council member in District B and make you the new council member in District B?
Well, the main thing is I'm accessible, and like I said earlier, my whole objective is to communicate things to the community. I'm visible. I can relate to what goes on in District B because I've lived out here all my life. I don't have to travel any distance to get to an event. I'm right here. I'm 15 minutes from Acres Home, 10 minutes from City Gas, 10 minutes from Pleasantville, 15 minutes from Greens Point. So I'm accessible. It's not like I have to travel 30, 40 minutes from out Pearland or Sugar Land or any of the lands, the Kingwood or whatever, to get to an event or to be active in what's going on in the community. So the main thing is, if they want a person with integrity who's going to fight for what's important for our community, and I say our because, again, I stress firmly, I live out here. But if they want a person who's going to fight for what's important for our community and be able to go back and talk to them and let them know what's going on, then they would vote for me.
All right. Kathy Daniels, thank you very much for talking to me today.
All righty.